This is Murray Yates welcoming you today to Mission Breakthrough. Welcome to Life with a capital L. Today we are going to be looking at the taking authority against spiritual darkness. And there was the idea of the gap as a place for personal and family intercession came into being in the latter part of the 1960s during the hippie movement. And there seemed to be a very real danger that the youth of our various churches would be swept into such lifestyles, and people were concerned. They were seriously at risk unless they were taught the importance of prayer. So the author of this book began planning weekend prayer retreats into the nearby Sierra Nevada mountains, especially for the teenagers of our church. The first retreat included 22 participants. We were all inexperienced in prolonged prayer sessions. Not one of us, for instance, knew how to pray an entire night. And frankly, we were all about to give up after less than an hour. Then the young participants, a 13-year-old, asked us to start praying in a different way, as warriors. He saw himself and his friends as warring against the darkness of the booze, sex, drugs, lifestyle of the hippie communes, and he asked us to stand with him all night to fight the devil. The youth had tears in his eyes as he spoke, and all agreed to go to war along with him. By 3 in the morning, a spirit of brokenness had settled over our retreat house. The room was warmly lit by a glow from logs burning in a large fireplace, but also from a fire burning within the young people themselves. We all began to weep and cry out. One 17-year-old student lay on her face in the middle of the room weeping for the youth of California who were in trouble with drugs. I was witnessing with our forebears used to call a spirit of travail, a wonderful word related to the word work or labour, as in giving birth. And indeed, the intercessory retreats from our church flourished until 175 young people were participating. Let's also remember that this was in the area, and this was in the time of the hippie movement. And of course, they were doing quite the opposite things. In fact, many people were being pulled down, lost, if you like, because of the way that they lived. However, within a year, the Jesus movement began in many parts of California. At least 800,000 young people would find Christ in those same exciting days. And amid all this, something profound was happening in various lives. God was placing in hearts a yearning for more of himself, a hunger that was to explode on a life-changing night in 1971. On that evening, I arrived at the church, this is the writer of the book, an hour and a half before our regular midweek youth intercessory prayer meeting. I made my way into a scheduled storage area behind the platform of our church, where I often went to find a quiet place to pray. Hidden away amid the boxes of costumes and props for Christians and Easter pageants, I began to see the Lord for an outpouring of His Spirit upon the youth of our church. At first, nothing out of the ordinary happened. Then, without much forethought, I asked God a simple, direct question. Hearing His voice in my heart was an entirely new experience, but that night I found I was expecting an answer. "What do you want me to do with my life?" I asked the Lord. And suddenly I heard the most startling answer. The words were surprisingly clear. "Because you have asked me this night, I will tell you this night." I had never heard the Lord speak so clearly. Tears began to flow as I waited for what was to follow. The answer came not as a voice but a picture, alive with movement. I saw an army of God's people marching. It was a remarkable sight. The army, 6 to 8 abreast, stretched as far as the eye could see. It formed a vast column that seemed to continue forever. What a wonderful vision to be able to have. "Who are these people, Lord?" I cried, "and where are they going?" A quiet answer followed. "This is an army of intercessors who will change the world. I'm calling you to help mobilize this army." Before I could respond, the picture changed. I was looking at a large white frame mansion. Coming and going from the building were clean-cut young people carrying Bibles, unusual in a day when communes were everything and long-haired youths living together was common. "These are residents at a house of prayer," the Lord told me. Each young person had made a commitment to give a significant time gift for intercessory prayer. Some were there for a summer, most for an entire year. Then the Lord took me inside the building. A large sign was attached to the door on my right at the entrance. The sign was hand-painted as if by one of the young people, and it quoted a portion of Ezekiel. "I sought for a man among them that should take up the hedge and stand in the gap before me for the land." Ezekiel 22:30. And just above the scriptures were the words, "The gap." The door opened slowly. Looking inside this room designated the gap. I saw a young lady, perhaps 19 years of age. She had long brown hair and silver-rimmed glasses, and she was kneeling at a small round table upon which rested a globe. As I watched and she lifted the globe a few inches of the table and began to weep. Then a young man came into the gap, and the girl transferred her burden to him. After a while, he too passed the globe to another. This continued as I watched in silence. "Lord, this is beautiful," I said softly. He responded with a challenge. "I want you to bring into being exactly what you have seen here." The vision was over. There in the storage room behind the platform of our church, I heard our own young people beginning to arrive for the evening. That night I shared the vision with our youth. There was unusual excitement, and the young people assured me they were ready to help bring my vision to life. I knew that night that God wanted me to find the white frame building and transform it into a prayer center. Within 6 months, God did give us our first house of prayer in Sacramento, California. Within 5 years, God gave me 100 young people, which each committed to a year of intercession. They supported themselves by praying in the finances to help us continue our ministry. Out of those 50,000 continuous hours of prayer, day and night, including holidays, God gave birth to prayer training that ultimately touched over 1 million believers in more than 120 countries of the world. It all began when 100 young people made themselves available for a year of prayer. Later, when asked how my prayer ministry began, I could say it started with a century's worth of prayer, 100 youths sanctifying a year of their lives equaled a century's worth of prayer commitment. Changing our world. A second life-changing vision occurred 9 years later. By that time, the first vision had become a reality, and God had given us our prayer center, and thousands of additional gap ministries had sprung up in houses and churches throughout the world, often in unusual circumstances. A Lutheran day school teacher built a gap shaped like Noah's Ark, where his preschool children went for as long as 30 minutes a day of prayer. It was often difficult to get the children to stop praying. They had discovered prayer can be fun. Years later, I visited a church in Malaysia that had grown to nearly 5,000 members in less than 8 years. This church, thriving in a land where the law prohibits witnessing to a Muslim, had a center where intercessors came for days of concentrated prayer. When entering the center, I noticed each door leading to a private prayer room, which had a gap sign similar to the one I had first seen in my vision. Later, I learned that a brother from New Zealand was sharing our vision elsewhere. He had passed through the region several years earlier. As the years passed and the army began to increase, God opened the doors for me to take this prayer vision to many nations through the Ministry of World Literature Crusade, now Every Home for Christ. The founder, Dr. Jack McAllister, having heard of our prayer ministry and believing prayer to be essential to the ultimate evangelism of the world, asked me to join his staff to develop prayer training for believers of all denominations. Yes, well, I didn't realize that one day I would serve every home for Christ. That is not me, of course, but Jack McAllister. And I joined the ministry and developed the change, the World School of Prayer. The School of Prayer was and continues to be a training course designed to strengthen believers in their daily devotional habits and to equip them to pray effectively for the world evangelization. One important aspect of the training is a challenge for believers to consider giving God a gift of 1 hour daily for personal prayer. This is based on Christ's challenge to his disciples. Could you not watch 1 hour? More than 200,000 Christians have made that commitment. Thousands more have agreed to invest 15 or 30 minutes a day. But as the army of prayer began to grow, I became increasingly concerned about focusing all this prayer energy on what would bring Christ the most glory. And prayer, after all, is not given as a means to gain increased material or spiritual pleasure, though personal blessings do result from a healthy prayer experience. And as the book goes on to say, rather prayer is God's supreme gift to assist the church in establishing his kingdom throughout the earth. And as I continued my search of the scriptures concerning the importance of prayer, Dick Eastman became convinced that believers are engaged in spiritual war that must be waged on biblical principles, just as Satan has an established order in the invisible realm. So believers must develop a strategy to stand effectively against these forces. The more Dick Eastman travelled, the more convinced he became that every region of the world has a controlling spirit ruling over it. It became evident that something must be developed to restrain these forces. Which is the background to the second major vision experience of Dick Eastman's life? It occurred following several days of fasting and prayer during a trip to Michigan. My devotional time, Dick Eastman says, in my hotel room besides Lake Michigan began much like that of any other day. Dick Eastman had come to the final chapters of the book of Revelation, and in his daily Bible reading, he had paused to meditate on the literal nature of the Lamb's Book of Life. He suddenly found himself longing to pray about names yet to be added to the most unusual of celestial records. And he blurted out a most unusual prayer. Lord, he prayed, please let me participate in a movement that adds more names to the Book of Life than have been added in all the history. It was a bold prayer indeed, but somehow he felt the Holy Spirit had led him to say the words. Tears began to flow as he stood up and walked to the window of his hotel room. Before me was a vast expanse of Lake Michigan, he said, lying placidly like a giant sheet of glass. As the sun's rays sparkled off the lake, he saw millions of tiny diamond-like bursts of light dancing in the distance. It reminded him of the description in Revelation of the multitude of redeemed humanity who will someday stand upon a sea of glass in Revelation 15:2. Then he recalled the promise of how blood-washed souls would come out of every kindred and tongue and of people and nation, Revelation 5, verse 9. He was convinced God had appointed the moment to reveal to him the role of intercessors in global evangelism. So lifting his face in anticipation, he experienced the second vision that would impact his ministry so strongly. Before him in a large arena stood a multitude representing every age group. He sensed that all these people in the area were committed intercessors. Each held a page containing names. I wondered what these names represented and why everyone in the massive gathering of believers had a personal list. And suddenly his attention was drawn in the opposite direction, and there he saw a throne and an angel who held a huge book. As he watched, each intercessor came to the throne and presented his list of names. And one individual caught his particular attention. She was well beyond 70 years of age, but although her face was wrinkled and her hair grey, she beamed with the joy of Jesus. And soon she too was standing before the angel, representing her list of names. And as the angel began recording the names in the great book, he asked the Lord what all this meant. These are the names of souls these warriors helped bring to a knowledge of his salvation. Where did the intercessors get these names? Come and I will show you, came the answer. With that, he saw this elderly saint on her knees, flying swiftly through the heavenlies. Of course, this was all in vision form. It was a straight sight, a strange sight. In his spirit, I knew she was entering a level of warfare I had never seen, and that she was flying thousands of miles in an instant. And this was, as I say, in vision form. She descended to hover over a village that seemed to me to be in India. Although I had never been there, my attention was drawn to a hut that appeared to be the focus of the saint's intercession. The hut was modest, even by the standards of the village. Within were a small table, a chair, and a bed. Its lone occupant was a middle-aged man who appeared to be of Indian descent, most likely a Hindu. As the intercessor continued in prayer above the hut, I noticed that even with the sun shining brightly, the hut was dark. And then I noticed a movement in the village. A man was distributing gospel literature. He paused at the hut and knocked gently. When the occupant opened the door, the worker handed him a gospel booklet. Through all this, the elderly saint remained stationary in the heavenlies as if waiting for something. Closing the door, the Hindu read a few sentences that told him about a loving Heavenly Father who came to earth in the form of a man, and God's only Son, a concept beyond the Hindu's comprehension. He believed there were many gods, perhaps millions. A monkey could be a god, or a cow, or a snake. Even a tree might be an object of worship. One son, though, one God, he thought. Nonsense. He tossed the book on the table. It seemed the darkness of the room prevented his comprehension of the truth. The man's rejection of the message seemed to be the cue the intercessor was waiting for. Into the darkness she plunged, through the roof of the hut, landing on her knees. The Hindu had no idea she was there. Reaching her hands forward along the floor with her palms up, the elderly woman appeared to be lifting something, and then she realized what she was doing. She was lifting the darkness in the room. The more she prayed, the more the darkness moved, and when she had raised it high enough, she slowly moved from her knees and began pushing the darkness towards the ceiling from a crouched position. What the person saw was this man coming to know Jesus Christ. And this has been proved since, and this man was a changed man. This is Murray Yates signing off for this month.